artichoke dip. I swear I'll scream.
They just finished eating breakfast and were all sitting around one of the formica-topped tables in the brightly lighted refectory. The greasy plates were all neatly stacked at one end, and the seven plastic mugs, holding the dregs of a coffee sub, were piled with them.
I can't stand any more of Rick and Mick's lemon meringue pie mix.
I bemoan the lack of a decent Lafitte in the candlelit cellars, or a halfway drinkable Mouton Cadet, or even a bottle of anything that remotely resembled wine.
How about you, Dean? I haven't seen you turn your nose up at anything here.
You want to know what I hate most about the food, Dad?
Yeah.
Feroz's frozen grits. So good, you can't stop coming back for more. Yuck.
Ugh. At least we got plenty of hot water for washing up dishes. And I believe that today's roster has Doc and Jack on that particular duty.
Makes fingers all wrinkly. Not man's work.
How wrong you are, Mr. Lauren. And standing on that bad leg can help to give it some gentle exercise. And just where exactly do you think you're creeping off to, old-timer?
Doc stopped in mid-stride, halfway to the door, his face flushing at being caught.
I swear that you are my personal nemesis, Dr. Wyeth, sent from the idle godlings of Olympus to persecute me.
Just collect up the dishes and get to work in the sluice room, Doc.
I believe that you are a reincarnation of Torquemada, cruel leader of the Inquisition. I swear that no moral woman could be so cruel.
Doc, just do the dishes.
Doc looked at his hands.
Me. I shall never play the viola da gamba again.
I hope that's a promise, Doc.
They started toward the gateway first thing next morning, all of them glad to be moving on again. The only obstacle in their way out of the redoubt was the small elevator. Ryan was uneasy about taking the metal cage down to the lower level. There had been some bad experiences in elevators in the past couple of years. In Deathland, you always tried to avoid putting yourself into any sort of potential trap.
Can I press the button, Dad?
Go ahead, son.
Ryan eased his finger off the trigger of the Sig Sauer, seeing that the rectangular metal box was completely empty.
Let's go.
It was a squeeze for all of them to get in.
Here we go again.
Sometimes I feel it'll never end, lover.
Everyone except Ryan had taken their places inside the armaglass walls of the actual Matrans chamber. The dense material was brown, flecked with white, allowing very little light to filter through. There was a gap between Dean and Christy, where Ryan would soon take his place. It was now a familiar scene, Doc's ebony sword stick lying by his side, JB carefully folding up his precious spectacles and placing them in one of his top pockets, Mildred holding his left hand and leaning back, Jack's mane of stark white hair spread across his narrow shoulders like a cascade of purest Sierra ice.
Ready?
Everyone nodded. Ryan stepped into the chamber.
Here goes nothing.
Didn't work, Dad.
I'm aware of that, son.
There hadn't been the usual sound as the door closed that indicated the Matrans mechanism had been triggered. Ryan opened it and pulled it firmly shut again.
Still nothing.
Problem?
No, I'm standing here opening and shutting the fucking door for my health. Of course there's a problem.
Everyone started to move around, most of them standing and moving towards Ryan.
Leave it.
Ryan closed and opened the door several times while the others crowded around him.
We can't go back there.
I know.
It is working, Ryan.
What?
By the three Kennedys, but I swear the jump is beginning.
Dark Knight, he's right. I can feel it in my head.
Close the door, Ryan. Quickly!
It won't.
The door seemed to have jammed, opened by about 8 inches, immovable either way.
Fuck! Everyone sit down and hang on to each other.
The anteroom and the control area beyond were blurring. Ryan felt himself slipping to his knees, and then sliding onto his face.
Cold.
It was a tangled, confused mixture of half-memory and new experience. There was the vague thought that the original incident might have happened somewhere on the southern edge of the Darks, or out on the Idaho Panhandle. The war wags had come rumbling into the township, expecting to find it a bustling frontierville. But the stores were all boarded up, the drinkers closed, the gaudies deserted. Tumbleweed piled against the picket fences. Trader had asked Ryan to go outside and look around.
A single man wreck's the best for this. I can't smell danger.
As soon as the main rear Armisteel hatch opened up on War Wag 1, Ryan guessed that his chief was right. There was no smell of danger, but there was the sweet, sour, prickling scent of death. The breath came feathering whitely from his open mouth as he stepped down onto the weed-laden tarmac and looked from side to side. He wore a Browning A500 12-gauge scatter gun slung across one shoulder, the walnut stock of the Belgian-made gun nudging at the small of his back. There was a double-action revolver, the Lama Super Comanche 2, taking a big .38 caliber round, tucked in its holster on the right side of his hip. Ryan almost knew the name of this pestle-bill, but not quite. It kept slithering from the back of his brain, reaching the tip of his tongue, then whispering back into the darkness. All he could remember was that it had been the center of two violently opposed religious factions. Now, looking around the small town plaza, he could see the graffiti, bringing it all back home. Albigensians drink Satan's piss. Reformed Pentecostals will burn forever. Dung-devouring heretics. Speaking with tongues is speaking to the devil. The electric colors flared so brightly it made Ryan screw up his good right eye against the drizzle. His hand dropped to the butt of his revolver. He spun, seeing a scrawny, piebald mongrel go scampering clumsily across the mouth of a narrow alley, gripping a severed human arm in its stained jaws. Beyond the main plaza was a small square surrounded by buildings, with the twin churches on opposing sides, the squat concrete buildings glowering at each other. There was an iron-railed fence along two sides, and a tumble-down cupola where brass bands might have played on those long-gone, sunny, pre-dark Sunday afternoons.
Cold.
The sun was a watery blur of sickly yellow, dipping behind the range of snow-topped peaks to the west. Shadows were lengthening across the silent settlement. Once he reached the corner of the plaza, he'd be able to see into the square. Suddenly, half a dozen vultures rose heavily into the afternoon sky from the square, leathery wings flapping, hooked beaks open, shreds of some sort of meat dangling from their jaws.
Bastards!
Ryan drew his revolver. Three more steps and he would be able to see into the square of the little town.
Fire blast.
There was death. Ryan saw something like 100 corpses, or what remained of them after the carrion birds and coyotes had taken their fill. They'd probably been lying there on the smeared flagstones for 2 to 3 weeks. In such cold weather, they had kept rather well. The flesh shrinking from the puckered leathery skin, leaving the long dark bones and the taut sinews exposed. Some of them resembled piles of discarded sticks cloaked in a few tattered rags. The soft tissues had gone first, leaving eyeless sockets and lipless, grinning mouths. Ryan holstered his gun and walked a few steps among the bodies, looking more carefully at them. He was stepping through the aftermath of a massacre. Many of the dead showed signs of having been hacked to death by axes or machetes. Some had been shot. There were no cartridge cases on the ground.
Smoothbore muskets.
Most of the dead were men, with about a third of them female, and a smaller proportion children. The wind was rising as dusk began to draw its soft gray cloak across the scene. Ryan hunched his shoulders.
Bastard cold.
It seemed as though every man, woman, and child in the Littleville had come together to fight to the bitter end. Discarded knives, spears, and axes lay everywhere, with a few bows and a scattering of arrows tipped with black crow feathers. But the survivors of the conflict had carefully taken away all of the firearms. As Ryan turned, his boot caught in some rags of a woolen shawl that had been wrapped around a little baby. The movement jerked at the tiny body, rolling it out on its back, sockets of wind-washed bones staring at the darkening sky. Its throat had been cut so savagely that the whiteness of the spine gleamed among the black threads of desiccated flesh. Ryan turned away, fighting back an attack of nausea that